a quick message before we get into this week's episode. For longtime listeners of the show, you know that I have been very reluctant to add sponsors and to add recommendations to our podcast. Our priority is to you, to the writers, and to the creators. And so we've held off to make sure that we can find partnerships that we feel good about and products that I can honestly recommend. And that's why I'm so excited to recommend this week's sponsor to you, Quillbot.com, Quillbot.com. This is a tool that I am personally using to build a newsletter that I haven't announced yet, but it's been hugely beneficial for me. So Quillbot is a paraphrasing tool. And the way that I'm using it is I'm scrubbing long form articles that are very, very in-depth with information that I know my audience will really value and appreciate. And I copy that content and I paste it into Quillbot. And Quillbot paraphrases all of the text into a couple sentences, sometimes a couple paragraphs, to really shorten and pack in the information, which allows me to better piece this information into a curated newsletter that I am sending out weekly. For people that listen, you know that I really, really believe in the newsletter space. We believe that newsletters are great businesses to start, and you should start one. If you want to get involved in online media and start creating a business for yourself, a newsletter is a great place to start. And this tool, Quillbot, has been so beneficial for me in building this curated newsletter that I'm working on. It makes it so that I can jam-pack a lot of information into not a lot of space. And it really, really has helped me format my newsletter and provide the information to my readers in a way that I know they enjoy, in a way that I know they can quickly digest, in a way that I feel really proud about. So once again, check out this week's sponsor, Quillbot.com, Quillbot.com. It's easy to sign up and tell them that Timon sent you. All right, let's get on to the show. Good morning, we're everybody. Live. We're live. We'll do it live.
Do it live. What's going on, man?
Hey, not much. I hope you had a great week. Great to see you. Today, we're talking about SEO. We are talking, we're getting straight to business on this episode. We're talking about cash money. We're talking about how to make money. We're talking about how to do so with SEO. This is something that I am very passionate about. I think I have a good frame of reference for this. And I think it's important to start off this episode by announcing that there are many, many different ways to make money with SEO other than being an SEO agency. The skill of SEO can be the driving force that you use to build a business that has nothing to do with services or nothing to do with actually performing SEO for other people. And so we have a lot of examples of that as well, because when people say SEO, and especially on this podcast, because I have an SEO agency, it's usually the first thing that people think of. And this is going to be one of the examples, but I want to drive home on this show that SEO is a skill that you can use for your own ideas and your own companies and your own products and services. And I'm excited to dive in. So let's just jump right into it. You got anything you want to start with, or you want me to take this?
Yeah, so I want to start with just a little bit of a setup for people, now that you did a good job positioning this and saying like what we're going to be talking about. Tim's company published an article on this last week that I think is worth checking out if you enjoy the show. Just super deep dive on all the different ways of making money. And just to kind of orient people before we get into specific examples, I just want to go at a high level through what some of those other methods are. So as you said, like SEO consulting and agency, that's kind of one of the main ways people make money in this space. But there are a bunch of others. So on top of like consulting services, you could think of one, which would be productized SEO. That's very, very similar to the agency thing. All it means, the only big difference is that you've gone ahead and package something up in a way so that you're getting paid basically like a fixed price for a very specific deliverable rather than like ongoing SEO maintenance and services. Another would be affiliate sites. So in that case, you're building essentially a site that you SEO yourself. You use it to drive traffic to somebody else's product. Then you take an affiliate, a cut of any revenue that you make there. Sponsored content. So this is, again, you building a site. And then you basically charge other people to be featured there. Rank and rent pages. I actually hadn't heard about this, so I'm kind of curious to learn more about it from you. But rank and rent, the basic idea seems to be, again, you drive the rankings, and then you, instead of sort of owning that site or owning the content, you rent out that site that now ranks to somebody whose business is going to benefit from owning it. We'll get into that deeper, but I think that's such an interesting opportunity. A couple more real quick. Grow and flip. Again, you're going to buy a website or maybe start it from scratch, rank it, and then sell it. Make money on the actual exit. Drop shipping, which is similar to maybe affiliate sales in that you're capitalizing on traffic.
I have a good drop shipping example.
Right on. Sell your own digital products, which is pretty on the nose. And I think that's probably where we'll stop. There's at least one more in the full length article, but I'll leave that for anybody who's interested in checking that out. So the big point here is I just wanted to orient people up front on what some of those other methods are for making money from SEO. And then, like I said, we've got different examples that we're going to get into first. So let me think through this for just a quick second. You said you have a good example of a dropship. I have a good example of the affiliate slash, I guess, actually, oddly enough, there's one here that's not really mentioned, which is just advertising, straight ads. And that's probably one of the hardest ways to make money from SEO. But I have an example of that that's really interesting for people. And then we have an example of somebody who's doing a good job of several of these. And we'll get into that. So maybe we start with the drop shipping one. And I think there's going to be a lot of crossover between that and some of the other things that we'll touch on here. Because the through line for dropshipping and some of these other examples is you're not selling SEO services. Instead, you're using your SEO skills to build a website that makes you money, right? And then there's all these different ways to monetize that. But at the end of the day, the core thing is you're building the traffic and then you're going to capitalize on it. So do you want to take it from there?
Sure. The dropshipping is probably my favorite example, although in the grand scheme of things, for me personally, it's the example I have that was like the least lucrative. But I want to start with that as like a little bit of a caveat, because the only reason why it didn't scale the way that other businesses can is just because the market was very small. So like the concept that I'm about to show, if applied to a bigger market, can be huge. But this was one of my favorite SEO things I've ever done, actually. And it was with my clothing company. I recently sold my clothing company. We talked about it like 6 months ago. And it's an e-commerce company. And the reason why I think this is so cool is because I think e-commerce is one of the most underutilized aspects of SEO that there is. So many different people think of e-commerce and physical product sales in terms of ads and in terms of social media. And don't get me wrong, if you're serious about creating a clothing line, for instance, you're going to have to run ads and you're going to have a really good Instagram account. But true to form, I didn't do any of that. All I did is I found 4 different keywords all around the idea of sober clothing. So it was sober clothing. It was sober t-shirts. I had a couple about like different outfits that people could put together. I don't even remember exactly what they were. But even today, I don't manage the site anymore. And so the rankings have slowly fallen over the last six to eight months, I think it's been. But even today, if you Google sober clothing, New Life Clothing is still number 4. And I used to sell 2 to 3 t-shirts a day on complete automation through Shopify and through dropshipping. I never touched a t-shirt. I never printed a single thing. I didn't send a package. The whole entire thing was dropshipped. all through this one keyword. So it was an extra like $40 a day in profit that came straight to me simply because I was able to rank this e-commerce store for, it was two keywords really. It was sober clothing and sober clothing brands. They actually, the search results for those two search queries looked a lot different. So I had to put two different pages together for it. And those two search queries alone turned into a business that would make me $40 a day for basically doing nothing. And eventually it got to the point where I sold it for pretty healthy five figures. Great, simple example that anybody can use now. Like you can do it right now and there's nothing stopping you. I'd say all in all, it took me 2 days to put the Shopify site together. Shopify has really good templates. It took me probably 2 days to set up the drop shipping. I used a company called Printful. They're an awesome company. And I did the whole thing through Printful. It took me probably another day to import all of the designs because it's a t-shirt company. So Printful would print the design on the shirt and you have to make sure you have the files right because they have to be AI files. And so like pulling all that stuff from Adobe Illustrator and importing it in or uploading it into Printful was a bit of a process, but you know, 5 days it took me and probably took me 2.5 weeks to rank for those keywords. And that was 10 years ago. And from that day forward, I was just slinging t-shirts off of two keywords. So it works.
That's so interesting. You know, I know people who are interested in this space these days, and I'm curious to get your take. There's so much more noise there than there was 10 years ago, not just sober clothing in particular, but like drop ship print on demand. So if you were getting into this today, how do you think you would analyze the market to pick an idea at first?
Yeah, great question, man. Because when people buy t-shirts, they're not buying a t-shirt. They're buying a representation of their identity. So you really, really have to be involved in a community that people are like proud to be a part of. And so this is weird stuff, right? Like, oh my God, this is embarrassing to use this example, but I used to play a PC game called StarCraft and there's like a deep, deep StarCraft community. And there was this t-shirt for anybody that's familiar with the game. Part of it is you have these little units that get resources and then you use those resources to do stuff. And these little tiny units would drill minerals and they would collect minerals. And there's an audio part in the game that say, if you run out of minerals, it say, need more minerals. Like it would do it over and over again. And I remember seeing some guy walking down the street with a shirt that had the graphic of the little unit mining minerals. And it just said, not enough minerals underneath it. And right away, it was like such a perfect example of that's it. You know, it has nothing to do with a t-shirt. This guy is walking around telling people what he's into. And so in that case, I know that we're talking about SEO, but I would actually suggest not to take the SEO too seriously. You need to find a community that people are passionate about, like spreading their ideas in. And so I know that StarCraft is the first one that like comes to mind and it's kind of ridiculous, but that's a perfect example.
I like that a lot. It reminds me of an example in the article. For people who haven't read it yet, there's this great tweet thread in there of a guy who basically set up a drop shipping store for a company called Buc-ee's. So if you don't know what Buc-ee's is, they're kind of a phenomenon. I think started in Texas. I live in Texas. They're definitely a big deal down there. Like everybody knows what Buc-ee's is. It's basically a gas station on steroids. You see this thing on the side of the highway. They've got 120 gas pumps and like, you know, 10,000 square foot store. You go into their bathrooms, they've got 40 bathroom stalls, 40 urinals, it's all gleaming clean, 20 coffee makers, everything is just bigger. And when you hear that concept, you think to yourself, there's no way that would work as a business, right? Like how are you going to maintain 100 plus gas pumps and 24-hour service on a huge facility? And the reality is, I don't know how they did it, but they have just become this like phenomenon. Everybody drops in and checks it out. So it doesn't matter when you go to Buc-ee's, it's always busy. Anyways, some guy on Twitter, and you can find the information in the article, it's linked in the show notes. basically realized that, you know, Bucky's has this huge reputation, but they weren't selling any of their merch online. And so he kept trying to reach out, start this partnership in order to drop ship through them, and couldn't get their attention. So he eventually went to Bucky's with his family and he just bought one of everything. And I guess it cost him $3,000. It took like an hour, or it took hours to get out of the checkout. Went back to his warehouse, paid a photographer to shoot everything, and then built a Shopify site, posted it, and talked. And then he talked to a whole bunch of journalists and he says, "I'm going to drop ship Bucky's stuff." And that ended up getting him enough attention from the company that they reached out to him and said, "Oh, actually, this is a great idea. You should totally do it." They had to kind of do a little back and forth to figure out exactly what the brand would be. But he ended up negotiating a situation where I guess Bucky's is now drop shipping products for his company because they didn't want to touch e-commerce and he was willing to go out there and hustle and get it done. So I think that was an interesting example. You basically gave two examples there. One is like, find a community that's like a reflection of something that somebody already wants to say about themselves and lean into that. That is definitely an option. The Bucky's is similar but slightly different in that you're looking for a community that already exists and isn't capitalizing on e-com and its members want it to be. So I think those are two really interesting examples of this whole dropship thing.
Likewise. And I have a really quick third example, which is pertinent. The other way is flash of the pan opportunities. And one of the best examples I saw of this is in the eclipse. Gosh, what was that? That must have been like 8 years ago or something. You remember how much of a craze there was for those glasses that protect your eyes for the eclipse? Some guy knew that the eclipse was happening. And he spent 2 years buying as many of these glasses as he could. And then he built the product on Amazon. And then he built a content website that just SEO'd for a bunch of keywords about these glasses. He had a garage full of glasses. And within like a week and a half, he sold a couple $1 million worth of these glasses.
Come on.
So yeah, I've never done that. But that's the same thing. It's all drop shipping. Because the point is, he never actually had the glasses. You know, he just bought all the rights.
A warehouse or something like that.
Exactly. So there is an opportunity as well to capitalize on a cultural trend, I guess you could call it, something that's here and gone. That's not necessarily something like I would recommend in terms of a sustainable business, but it's totally an opportunity.
It's interesting. I would be curious to know more about that guy's company because you got to think eclipses happen over and over again. So if you pick the right one, It's seasonal, but you might just see these like, it's almost like emergency supplies, you know, like emergency preparedness. I've always been curious about what it's like to run one of those companies because most of the time, like everyone just thinks you're crazy. And then all of a sudden, you know, the world's out of toilet paper and like everyone just buys your stuff. These are like that Jody DTC emergency supply company is killing it. And I got to think it's, you know, it seems like it would be seasonal to us, or like, you know, seasonal in that there are spikes and valleys, but the reality is like all over the world, people are hitting emergencies. So I wonder if it levels out in the long term, the same way, like all over the world, they eventually experience the eclipse or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's interesting. And the big idea there, and I think this actually checks a lot of the same, a lot of the boxes that I originally started with, which was, you're going to SEO a site yourself rather than a client site, and then somehow parlay that into money. We talked about selling physical products here and selling those through a drop shipper. We skipped a little bit one option that is even simpler, though, and that's affiliate sales, right? So did you have an example of this or no?
Yeah, for sure. It's another personal example. And I think this example is important because I always thought of affiliate as kind of like that doesn't actually work, right? But there's two examples. One is of a mattress blog that I was looking for and I couldn't find. Mattresses became huge businesses. Well, they've always been huge businesses, but with the box mattresses that came around over the last
Like
4 years, some
Casper and
guy.
stuff like that.
And I couldn't find it anywhere, and it's right in front of me. I was looking, but he created a blog all about reviews for mattresses and just completely crushed it. The example that I have is a site that Johnny Naster and I did together called LSAT Clarity. And we created a website that does reviews on courses, their test prep courses, basically. So when people are studying for their law degree, they have to take a really, really difficult test. That and like the CPA test, I think, are two of the hardest tests in the world. And there's a lot of prep that goes into it. So people buy courses to help them prepare to take this LSAT. And we created a blog called LSAT Clarity. Unfortunately, the site sort of started falling off when digital commerce came around, because you only have so much focus and you have to prioritize. But quickly, that site started ranking, and it got to the point where I was profitable on it within 2 months or so, and then I was making $700 a month in just straight profit for about a year and a half. And now it still breaks even in terms of the affiliate sales. It wouldn't take too much for us to get it back to where it was at its peak, but at the same time, it's hard to pull ourselves away from what we're doing at digital commerce for like a small affiliate site, right? But if you're a person that just has a hobby and you want a little side project, that site was doing, I think we averaged 2,100 a month in profit for a good 7 or 8 months before the client load for digital commerce got to the point where we couldn't manage it anymore. So that's a totally viable business.
And I guess I'll ask you the same question this time around too, which is like, if you were getting back into that, how do you think you would approach the finding of affiliate products?
Well, in that particular industry, there's only a few of them. And so that was, believe it or not, that was the hardest part. Ranking the site was pretty freaking easy, to be honest. Getting the deals set up with the companies, there's one called Magoosh. I know it's a ridiculous word, but that's actually the name of it. Another one was called Princeton Review. Those were the two biggest. And then there's a couple other ones that had test prep courses on like real specific things about the LSAT. So in that case, it wasn't difficult because there's only a few of them. But at the same time, that was the most difficult part, because booking the actual agreements with them was a little bit challenging. And then once the agreements happened, then the whole thing was taken off, basically.
For anybody who's new to this concept, I want to break it down even a little bit more, just to kind of like show you the mechanics of what's really happening too with an affiliate sale. So every company that sells a product, they invest a certain amount of money to get a customer all the time. And most of them have a pretty good idea of how much they're going to end up spending in order to get a single customer. What pretty much everybody is trying to do with an affiliate sale is they're basically saying, hey, this is how much I spend to get a customer. If you can bring me a customer, you just bring me a customer. I will give you this money, this amount. And it's usually either at or below what they're typically spending on a customer. There would be no reason for it to be higher. So, in the case of like using SEO or something like that, what an affiliate is really betting on is they're saying, okay, well, there's probably somebody out there who's better at getting attention for this topic than I am. So if they are and they're willing to bring me customers, I'm willing to give them money for it. And then obviously that scales quite well because you can have many, many, many affiliates all out there working to try and send you traffic, and you don't pay them anything until they actually deliver. So that's kind of what's going on here behind the scenes. And I like this business model. I do think one thing that's important, maybe this is a personality thing, but if you're building a media brand that's going to monetize on affiliates, I think you got to like and care about the space and the affiliates that you actually hype, because these days with so much media out there, like pretty much the only thing you're trading on is trust. And so You do. I think you will get a lot further in the long run if you pick and represent brands that you like, you use and you trust. And so if you're going to do that, we've talked about this on the show before a couple of times, but for anybody who hasn't heard those episodes, this is kind of the way to go about it. There are a few big places to get affiliate deals, right? So like Amazon for physical products is probably one of the best known, because you don't really have to have a ton of infrastructure set up. You can pretty much just sign up for their affiliate program. They'll give you a link, and then you can link to Amazon products on your site. And the cool thing about that is that you get a cut of the total order that somebody places when they buy through your link. So not just the products that you're like prioritizing or showing off, but if they go there and they buy an extra pair of socks or they buy whatever while they're there, you get a chunk of that too. So that's pretty cool. Amazon's a big one. The other two that were recommended to me is ShareASale and Rakuten, which I still don't know how to pronounce. Rakuten, I think it is. These are like basically marketplaces for affiliate deals. Those were recommended to me by Jordan DiPietro, who ran the blueprint for Motley Fool, which was a really big publication. So they, you know, these are like highly vetted, quality places to go find affiliates to work with. So you can find these deals without working out an agreement directly with the affiliate. And that's one of the major benefits of affiliate in general, is that you can be a one-person shop. You don't have to have a huge audience in order to get them to take you seriously, because they only care if you can send them business. And if you can do that with one reader, guess what? They're going to pay you, right? But if you get the affiliate deal on one of these marketplaces, you're usually giving up a little bit, right? Because you're basically paying for the convenience of making it really easy to find the deal. And so the way that Tim went about it and actually like structured the deal with an affiliate is where you ultimately want to end up. And one of the best ways to get there is to start small. You can start by finding somebody on a platform. And then if the link that you're posting for them gets a lot of traffic, it's usually pretty easy to round up all that data, send it to them and say, hey, my audience clearly likes what you're selling. Would love to talk about like a more boutique offer here, right? Another way is to simply post information about their product for free for a while, send them some traffic, and then do the exact same thing. Round up the data, send it to them and say, hey, like, here's what I've seen. I think I could be a useful affiliate. Like, let me know if you want to talk. So there's all these different paths into the affiliate world. But the thing I like the most about it, if you're doing it right, is like very low overhead, pretty high upside. If you're good at getting attention, you're good at the whole content game. I personally know people who don't believe this though. There are people out there who don't care what they're selling. And they're just like, look, I'll sell whatever pays the most. And those people make a lot of money. It's not the way I want to spend my time, but it is possible. The last thing I'll say about it, and then I think this is a nice dovetail into maybe the next type of SEO company, is this. I have been screaming this from the rooftops forever, and I'm going to keep doing it until somebody emails me and shows me that they've done this. I think there is a huge opportunity to start a niche website about women's nail styles and turn it into an affiliate blog. And the reason for this is basically twofold. One, there's a ton of search traffic out there for different nail styles every single month that's completely uncompetitive. I mean, I've looked these things up in Ahrefs, and they're talking like a 5 to rank. Not 20, not 25, not 50, like a zero competition on most of these, and not small search volume, 30, 40, 60,000 searches a month. Huge traffic out there. Yeah, on just things like French tips or like almond-shaped nails or Halloween nails, Christmas nails, like all every permutation of that you could think of, tons of traffic, almost zero competition. And the other reason, I was talking about this with the two women that I used to work with at Trends. I was like, do you think this is a real thing? Or like, how do people actually buy nail polish? And they're like, well, you have your brands that you like, you know? And it would be hard to just use this to launch a new nail polish brand because nobody knows if your stuff's any good. But you could do it affiliate style and just find like one nail polish brand that's popular or a handful. And I wouldn't even drop ship it. I would just set up an affiliate arrangement and rake in traffic and send it to them. I think there's a huge opportunity there. I still haven't seen anybody do it. So there's your affiliate idea for the week.
That is so cool. Should definitely do it because it reminds me of the example I've used a few times. Affiliate is a great starting place. And the more I've like learned about it, the more I recommend anybody, like if you don't know what to do, start creating content and book affiliate deals. And my friend who runs his brand Native Nomads, which is all about overlanding, I told you about this. That's what he did. He booked affiliate deals until he got comfortable in the industry. And then coincidentally enough, he created his own drop shipping company. And so now every time he puts out a video, and yeah, he has subscribers on his YouTube, but he actually spends a lot of time SEOing his videos. All of it goes to adventurerigshop.com, which is like his own company now, where he just drop ships all of the products. So it's so cool. I'm definitely going to link this one up in the show notes as well, because this is kind of a perfect example of the two things we just talked about right now and how you can progressively just increase your skills. And as you increase your skills and like the sophistication, you can increase your margins. Another perfect example, and you can for sure do this about women's nails, which obviously I need a whole lot of education on.
I'm glad that you pointed out the like stack rank order of these two. I think we maybe reversed it a little bit in the way that we talked about these, but there really is an easy way to get into this and then expand. So I think affiliate would be first. And I agree with you, man. I started, I think maybe like the first money I ever made online was affiliate. It wasn't much, but it was so exciting. And it was through Amazon. It was through my blog. I wrote a piece of, I had spent like a month on the Appalachian Trail or something like that. I wrote a piece all about the gear that I brought with me. And actually specifically, it was what did I end up with at the end? So like, what's the stuff that actually matters? Because there's plenty of packing lists out there to show you like what to bring. But this is what I actually ended up with at the very end. And I linked everything. And it was so exciting. The first time I saw that, like, oh, somebody read this, they clicked through and now I'm going to get paid for it. And that article is still one of the like top traffic drivers to my site, which is embarrassing because I wrote it almost 10 years ago now. And that's not an indicator of how popular it is. That's an indicator of how little I've done on that site since then. But Amazon, super easy way to get into it. Very exciting when you finally get paid. Affiliate in general, great stepping stone. Then you can branch out and do your own deals. You could do physical product, which we talked about a little bit, or, and this is the next stage, you could do ads, like display ads. And this, I think, to be honest, if you had asked me a week ago, like, hey, is there still money in doing like a volume SEO play where you just display ads against it, I would say like maybe for the people who are established, but it doesn't feel like it's a space that is going to let a lot of people in anymore. Did I say that in a way that's clear or no? Do you think people still have no idea what I'm talking about?
You absolutely did. And that's actually the reason why I didn't put ads in the article is just because of how difficult it is to monetize a blog through ads. Yourboulder.com still has ads on it. That site gets about 5,000-ish organic hits a month. And I make like, I think $16 a month from it. It's just not worth it, which is also really, we're getting into like the next step now. But the newsletter ads that I sell from the Year Boulder email monetizes pretty well. I make about $1,500 a month from it, and I have an employee that runs the whole thing. So I know that we're getting two steps removed from it now, but if you're going to monetize through ads, true to form with the way that Ethan and I like newsletters, which is still like the best thing that you could do ever, true to form, use SEO to just generate traffic and then use that traffic to create newsletter subscribers. And then if you're going to run ads, run them in the newsletter, because the CPA is just so much higher. And in AdWords, it's like 3 cents. Sometimes it's like point something cents. Whereas in a newsletter, you know, it's like $45. Yeah. So do that.
I think I agree with that. The only, and this is going to be, here's the exception. I hesitate to even say it because I know there's going to be a bunch of people out there who hear this and they think that they're the exception and they're going to spend a bunch of time trying to do this. Here's what I'll say. Don't do ads. Now, if you hear me say that and you're like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, maybe you're the exception. Most people should not do this, but I did find an example. I'm not going to say what the site is because one of the things about these SEO niches is that people are pretty protective over the topics they write about. Because it's extremely competitive. But I did find a site that's doing, I'll just say, several million in revenue, mid seven figures in revenue every year. They have been around for 4 years. So this is not a long-standing site that, you know, got in back when SEO was brand new. You're talking 2019. That's not a ton of time. They have one monetization stream, which is Mediavine ads. And yeah, they're doing several million dollars a year, 90% margins, incredible business that you've probably never heard of. So this is still possible, but I think it's the kind of thing where you have to be so focused on the one model that you can't be doing anything else. You're not gonna do this and, you know, potentially do like affiliates and a community and a newsletter and stuff like that. I think this is just my personal take, but I think you've got to be laser focused on the one KPI, which is like, how do we get as many views to the site as possible and rank for as many topics as possible? And so I wanted to offer, I was able to speak with this person a little bit about how they run the business and got some good tips just on like where they started, where they are now, some of the operational stuff for people who do feel like this is a viable path for them. And really what I think that is like somebody who's been obsessed with SEO for years, probably has experience building other content sites already, probably grew them quite large, and is maybe just looking for like their next project. So where this person started was with one writer and one graphic designer. And those people that combined were writing and publishing 3 to 5 posts per week. The posts were all about 1,000 words a piece. And she hired both of them on a website called onlinejobs.ph, which is it's a hiring platform for the Philippines. So these are people over in the Philippines. At that point, she was paying close to like $15 per 1,000 words. These people are now much more experienced and prices have gone up. So the recommendation that I got was for high quality content producers these days, you're going to be paying like in the Philippines, $50 to $70 per 1,000 words. And if you think of 1,000 words as the article, then great, $50 to $70 per article. And the expectation is that these people are writing roughly one article per day. Now, the way she runs a business is they have their topic. They are continually doing keyword research and then basically doing content briefs on the words that they want to rank for. Early on, when the website was new, she kind of targeted like the 20-ish in terms of like ranking, what do they call it? Ranking difficulty. So that's things that are like, you know, they're big enough to drive you some useful traffic, but they're small enough that you're not like competing with, you know, Home Depot for clicks or something like that. Actually, I have no idea if Home Depot has a good SEO profile. Probably not.
They do.
Really?
Actually, for the exact reason that you talked about, because Home Depot has been such a big business recently because of all the increase in storms and like emergency supplies. So they've really SEO'd their website for things like that, things that pop up randomly. So total sidebar, but fun fact about Home Depot.
That's interesting. Okay, but so that's roughly where she started. One writer, one graphic designer. And the job of the writer was to write, the graphic designer did the images and also the uploading to the site. And a lot of people don't realize that that really is a significant amount of work. So you can have your writers do it, but you got to factor in to the equation that, you know, like I'll spend probably 20% of the time that an article takes to write, uploading it to the site. It's significant, especially, and I'm not even that good at SEO. So if you're real serious about SEO, it takes even longer than that. So just factor that in. Where they are now is they have 9 writers, 2 editors, 1 dedicated photographer, 1 graphic designer, 2 VAs, 1 and 1 SEO manager. And the SEO manager is essentially working to go back through the backlog and just update content and optimize it for like the new SEO rules. Thousands of articles already published, and they still keep the same expectation, which is 1 article per day. So with the 9 writers, they're currently doing 8 to 9 articles per day. That was sort of the high level operational side of what I got. The other 2 recommendations. Oh, there's two more quick things. So I mentioned onlinejobs.ph, great place to find people who are high skilled talent in the Philippines. The other 2 that this person recommends specifically for bloggers and like finding good writers were Indeed and then the Pro Blogger Job Board. So you can check those out if you're interested. And the last thing I'll say is that in terms of driving traffic to the site, this person highly reliant on SEO, yes, but also took the time to build an email list and now sends 2 emails per day to that list. In each email, they've experimented with a lot of different format types, but each email is essentially a roundup of 10 of their articles. And so their theory is that that direct traffic bump every single day also helps their SEO because they're getting tens of thousands of people who now go straight to the site every single day and Google takes notice of that. So there's a lot going on there. Again, I really don't think it's something that a lot of people could pursue because it's such a competitive space. You need to be going after topics that are so big in order to make that kind of money that you're just competing with giants up there. But for the people who really are motivated to make that work and who maybe probably have some bankroll to get it started with a writing team, it is possible. And those are some of the basics of how this person got started and what they're doing.
I have another really fast example. A guy named Zach is a friend of mine. I went out to dinner with him a couple of times in Nashville. He's part of a company, Savage.Ventures. Zach Litwack, I think it is. We'll post his handle in the show notes. He has an entire portfolio of websites that do that, and they're just content churn machines. You have to always be posting, and it's just a super super high volume type business, but. But I'm saying that because I'm seconding what you're saying. Like, don't do ads. But if you're going to, do it like this and just expect to be churning and churning nonstop and like scratching for pennies and scratching for pennies. And if you collect a couple million pennies, you'll be all right.
A couple million pennies is all it takes. Okay, we're getting close to the end here. There's 1 or 2 more things I wanted to talk about real quick. Do you have, the other examples that you have, what categories would you say they fall into?
Well, I have 2 examples for really, really great productized service businesses. And man, I'm such a fan of this. One of the people that I want to highlight here is Brian Cassell. He now has a website called Productize and Scale. And so this isn't necessarily an example of a business model that follows this business. He used this model, sold his companies, and then basically said, I'll just teach people how to do this. So he's chilling now. Brian Cassell, he's great, but he had a company that had a productized SEO service for restaurants. And man, he crushed it. And it wasn't even just the SEO. The SEO was the recurring part of it, but he had a bunch of other features. So he had like a productized theme, a website theme, because I mean, what does anybody do when they go to a restaurant, right? They look at the pictures, they get the ambiance, they look at the menu. So we created like an interactive menu in the website, a way to easily book that would link you straight through your booking channel so that you could get a time slot for a table. And then he had a productized marketing service, which was only for restaurants. And man, it was so cool. He made so much money with it and he sold it. And now he just runs a thing called Productize and Scale.com. He's a super cool guy. Check out Brian Casselli. He's awesome. Another example is Marie Haynes. So Marie Haynes isn't as well known in kind of our space, but in the SEO space, she is very, very well known. What she does is she follows very, very closely the algorithm updates for Google. And every time Google announces an algorithm update, she does a whole range of experiments basically to see, like, okay, let's see how things are actually reacting to this algorithm update as opposed to taking the web dev blog for Google's word for it. And then she constantly tweaks this productized service she has, which is a huge audit and a huge de-indexing of spam links. And so if you want to pay her, I mean, it's expensive, dude. I used her when I was working with Journey Pure. It's $15,000, and she doesn't even do the work for you. She just does an audit and says, like, here are the backlinks that you should de-index. And I don't know, it's a lot of work, but she's making money for sure. So those are the two examples that I would really, really look at. I would check out Brian Cassell. I would check out Productize and Scale, and then I would check out MarieHaynes.com. Marie, MarieHaynes.com. She's a real legend in the SEO space, and her productized model just crushes it, dude. 24/7 nonstop, flipping out these $15,000 audits. It's insane. It's silly.
That's awesome. I will say this, we've also mentioned this on the show before. Productizing services is the only path that I have seen to like enjoyable growth.
Yeah, that's the word. Like, growth that doesn't make you want to burn your company to the ground, basically.
Yeah. And it's cool that somebody has like a product out there on how to do it. The other great one for this would probably be the E-Myth Revisited, great book on how to basically productize services as well. But everybody that I know who I look up to in terms of like their lifestyle, their business, the kind of the combination of those things has found a good way to productize the service. And a lot of times that means, you know, when your business is young, you throw a lot at the wall, you see what you're really good at, and then you've got to start saying no to stuff. You say no to stuff and you create a super specific package of what you offer. There's no debate with a customer about what they're going to get. The expectations are clear, your prices go up, and it just makes the work so much easier. I know a guy right now who basically went through this process last year, and what ends up happening is, you know, you can run a successful age. Here's the problem. There's like an idea in the agency world that you're supposed to grow the agency. You know, like that's what you do. So you sign these big clients, and then you add more people to your roster to handle the work. And then, you know, if you ever run into a situation where you drop a client, now the nightmare is you're now supporting all these people who are not actively working on a project. And so it can become this monster that you've constantly got to feed. And so you're saying yes to all sorts of different projects, and then nothing is efficient. And what he ultimately did was some self-reflection to figure out what is the company really good at, what personally is he enthusiastic about, and what does he want to spend like the next 5 years getting really good at. And then they basically said no to everything else. They productized a service for a very specific type of client. They say no to everything else. He like doubled his take home because the business is just running so much more efficiently now. Cut his work hours down to like, you know, I think he's like quarter time right now, between 20 and 30 hours. Wow, actually that's weird that that's considered quarter time. But yeah, it's 20 to 30 hours, I think is about where he is. Huge benefits to productizing. So big fan. I will check out those resources. The one that I kind of wanted to just get your take on real quick, because I know we're coming towards the end here, is the whole rank and rent thing. That was a new concept to me, but when I read it, I thought, oh, there's such a huge opportunity here for your average person in your average town. Because, so tell me if I'm getting this right. The concept is I'm going to go build a website that gets a very specific kind of traffic, like a very targeted sort of like lead type of traffic. And then I'm going to rent that website to somebody in my space that is looking for leads. So like as an the example that came to my mind would be like, you know, drywall in Hartford County, Connecticut. If I can get a page to rent for or to rank for that, then I go out to all these drywall contractors and I'm like, hey, your website sucks. You want to just rent mine? And then all the traffic and leads that come in through that just go straight to them. Is that essentially the business model?
You could do it that way. Yes, that is the business model, but you can go even further down going page by page. So the pros and cons to this are that it takes a lot of management. The con is that it takes a lot of management. The pro is that the opportunity here is usually for businesses that wouldn't normally do it. So drywall, that's a perfect example. I know I mentioned your Boulder before, but I'll mention it again. The other great example here is, you know, we have a page that ranks for 5 best cheeseburger spots in Boulder. And so once you have that, you're saying to yourself, okay, you want to be the best cheeseburger spot. Well, I'll make you the best cheeseburger spot because your website isn't even anywhere close to being listed for cheeseburgers. And so it's sort of a hybrid behind advertising and affiliate, because like technically it is advertising, but it's a little bit more nuanced than that, because it's advertising that is something so specific based on the really particular search query that the advertiser wants to be on. And it's different from sponsored content, because sponsored content is a piece where the whole entire piece of content is either about a particular business or features a particular business in something that's more nuanced. So maybe the article is about a certain thing, and then in the article you say a great example of how this certain thing is happening is with such and such business. And sponsored content, I think, is also a really, really great way to monetize with SEO. We didn't touch on that yet. But yeah, rank and rent is one of the more profitable ways to do it, because there's only the inventory is basically one, but the upside is whatever you can sell it for, right? So if you want to be the best cheeseburger spot in Boulder and you've ranked for that page, well, it's like, do you want it or not? And if you do, this is what it's going to cost, as opposed to, you know, having like an ad network and people saying like, yeah, sure, I'll put my ad there. It's not about that. You're either the best cheeseburger spot or you're not. So it takes management. That's the con to it. But the pro to it is just the upside on profitability is super high.
I feel like people listening can start to understand why people in our industry are so jaded, because it's like, you just see behind the scenes, like nothing you think is real. There is no best cheeseburger spot. It's all paid. There's no Forbes 30 under 30. Like this, like everything is marketing. It all comes back to advertising. Wow. Yeah, it's super interesting. So that was another area where I hadn't heard of it. But I thought when I heard it, I was like, this feels like maybe the most approachable business for somebody in a small town, or in like a medium size, pretty much any town. I feel like this is the opportunity that could be replicated over and over and over and over and over again. A lot of things that we mentioned on this show are kind of interesting, because if two listeners tried to do them, technically they'd be competing with each other, right? But this, to me, doesn't fall into that category. It's kind of like the difference between playing craps and playing poker, right? So yeah. At the poker table, you have to take everybody else's money. At the craps table, if you're winning, everybody's winning. And in this case, I feel like this model is the one where it's like, yeah, pretty much anybody, you could replicate this so many times. Okay, I had one. Well, you said we hadn't touched on sponsored content yet. Did you want to touch on it, or did you have more to say?
I can touch on it quickly because of how applicable this one is. I mentioned the website bhbusiness.com in the podcast a couple of weeks ago. It's probably like my favorite website and favorite idea I've seen in the last 4 months in terms of somebody taking a B2B industry and creating a media site around it. You know how I like those things that like aren't sexy, but are super profitable. They have 14,000 emails, which doesn't sound like a lot. And if you want to post a sponsored post on their website, it's $3,000. And you have to write the damn thing and send it to them. And like, it's just this enterprise space I'm so fascinated with. And every time I see stuff like this, I'm like, what are we doing? Like scrounging for likes and retweets and, you know, like pay $5 a month to subscribe to my Substack. Like, what are we doing? Make a blog about the behavioral healthcare industry, or I don't know, make a blog about construction, and Caterpillar will pay $10,000 to write one sponsored blog post, you know?
Yeah.
So bhbusiness.com, check them out. Awesome freaking website. I read their newsletter every morning and they are sold out on sponsored articles. And sponsored articles, by the way, is the least revenue, is the cheapest thing that you can do to get on their website. And it's $3,000. So yeah, so cool, man. That's so cool.
That's really interesting. Not a ton of traffic either. I mean, a decent amount. This similar web says about 65,000 visitors, probably a lot for the industry, right? I mean, it's pretty niche.
They're a leader for sure.
Yeah. Okay. The thing I like about this, well, sponsored content, I got to say, is probably tricky. I love the opportunity. And one of my favorite implementations of this, oh God, I can never remember if it's Lenny or who's the other guy? Mario that writes there's a guy, Mario, who writes a newsletter. I can't remember what it's called. It's like Not Boring, I think, is his newsletter.
Boring, Not Boring.
Yeah, I think it's just
Not Boring. No, I think it's just Not Boring. Yeah, I think it's just Not Boring.
Well, don't quote me on this because I can't remember exactly who does it, but there's somebody out there right now who's leading one of the bigger Substacks and does these sponsored posts. And I've heard that the sponsored posts are like six figures to get written about your company. And he writes them. So it's kind of a hybrid between the two, like what you were talking about, and then the opposite of just running your own content site. So what he'll do is he'll like dig into these companies to show how they became successful. And there's so many readers in there and there's such a deep dive. And so it's passed around so much that it just ends up driving a lot of business for these companies. But he's charging six figures a pop to write those articles. And that's not bad. That you can't live on that, but it's not bad. So yeah, there's definitely some interesting stuff in the world of like this enterprise attention thing. The interesting thing is, it all comes back to the same skill, which is you've got to know how to write interesting content. Good shit. Like, I suppose there are some people who just chase the algorithm and it's a tough game. Some of them can pull it off. You're burning through content at that rate. But if you know and how to get attention and you practice that craft, that pays dividends. And I become more and more obsessed with it every week that I'm in this industry. I have one last example, and maybe we can end on this, of somebody who's basically doing several of the things that we just talked about. So this is a person we've actually talked about here on the show, Jackie Chow. He runs a SEO agency called Indexy. And we talked about him a few weeks ago because he does these really interesting revenue breakdowns every month. So every month he posts his personal revenue and then where all that comes from, and does a live AMA on Twitter where you can ask him anything you want about how he's running these businesses. So I'm just going to read the most recent one. This is from the end of June 23. And he said, I made $161,000 from 9 different revenue sources in June. This is up $61,000 from May, and down 150,000 from all-time highs. So he's been doing these breakdowns for quite a while. Okay, so here's where it comes from. Let's see. 67,000 came from Indexy, which is his SEO agency. He's been winding this down for quite a while. doing a lot more productized services, but also just using it to focus on other things. It's almost doing like the Hormozi model where he wants to buy businesses and build them instead of working for clients. But 67,000 from Indexy, which includes his newsletter that he sends. 44,500 from Amazon. That's up from 14K last month. His cut of that is about 30%. I don't know where he splits that with. But what's really interesting is that he's actually negotiated a custom rate card for his Amazon affiliate account. So he gets paid, better than most normal affiliates on certain categories. And I would, Jackie, if you're listening to this, I'd love to know how he did that. Okay, 22,500 from Mediavine. That's an ad platform. Let's see. He said, onboarded another partnership with a large medical brand. We're about to take over Google together. Every single article we're posting goes straight to the top five on Google. Large brands are truly playing the game in easy mode. We only keep 20%. So sounds like that's, I don't exactly know where that money is coming from, whether it's a service that he offers or a site that he's helping with to get brands attention. An owned site that he's using to get client brands attention. I don't know exactly what that is, but it's ad revenue. Then 11,200 from a Airbnb that he runs, 10K from a spin out agency that he started recently, 2,400 from Binance, which I think it's, these are commissions. So I'm assuming that's more affiliate income. And then 1,600 from VPN affiliates. There's a couple more small things in here that I won't mention because they don't look like they're really related to the SEO, but it's a great example of how like one person who got good at SEO has now parlayed that into several different things, including services, productized services, affiliate sales, ads. And he also happens to run a D2C company that's doing quite well. I'm sure they're using SEO for that too. So Jackie Chow, very interesting character online. Would definitely check him out.
Yeah. I commented something on one of his tweets and he responded like, oh, well, just be prepared to be disappointed. And so now every time he tweets something, I comment disappointing. I honestly don't know if I'm annoying him or not, because at first he was kind of responding and now he just doesn't. And so I think I'm kind of pissing him off. But yeah, he's really cool. He did a an AI review of a bunch of different products, and I bought some equity and an AI tool recently, and he ranked us at number 5 actually, which I was super pumped about. And he's SEOing his videos, so that's really cool about Jackie. I want to finish off with what you said though about write interesting shit. I'm always just continue to be more and more obsessed with it and continue to be more and more enamored by it, because what you said is so true. Using that same example with BH Business, they wrote an article about how Medicare is starting to open up their services to cover some of these different behavioral health services that you would bill for. And it's such a dry, boring topic, but the fact that they took so much time and they got quotes from experts and they gave breakdowns about like how these kind of services would affect people 65 and older and like how that could go into the market. First thing I did is I shared it with my team. I was like, hey guys, look at this. Like, this is really, really important. And it was right then and there that I had one of those moments where it's like, good writing just matters. This just always matters. It always freaking matters. And so if there's one lesson that I know Ethan and I want to portray to you guys, like, yeah, we'll talk about podcasts and cool ideas that people are doing and all that stuff, right? But if you leave each episode with the idea that good writing matters, it makes me feel like this is always worth it.
Perfect. Perfect way to end the show, man. This was fun. I think let us know what you thought of this. Do you like this format? Definitely check out the article that was published on Copyblogger 2. It's really good. And I'm not just saying that because I work on the show. I told Tim, this is the first Copyblogger article I've read so far. and it was awesome. So I'm going to keep reading them. All right. I will see you all next week. Talk to you later.
See you guys.